It's on now? Okay.
Yes.
At least a couple of you were at Winnow 3 in October. So if you were, I apologize because not much has changed since then. And this is essentially the same talk as what I gave then. I'll go over, well, we all know this, the electroweak corrections, the experimental inputs, a test of the standard model using effective couplings, the global fit, the Higgs mass limits, and if I have time, I'll dabble in this, although you guys know much, much more about that than I do. So, as we know, the electroweak radiative corrections, it's all about loops, loops involving the top quark or loops involving the Higgs boson, so it's ideal for this kind of audience. The radiative corrections depend in first order quadratically on the top quark mass and logarithmically on the Higgs mass. Unfortunately, only logarithmically, so we don't have as nice a bound on the Higgs mass as we'd like to have from radiative corrections. The data sets, a large amount of data, which came from LEP. This is a plot from L3, but there are similar plots from all four experiments. In total, for all four experiments, we have about 16 million Z decays. About 35,000 WDKs shown here. And unfortunately, this little dashed line here shows what we would have expected with a Higgs of 115 GeV, and we have roughly about zero Higgs events. The effective couplings, we know GV and GA. From GV and GA, we can form these polarization parameters called A, which are just combinations of GV and GA, and the forward-backward asymmetries that we usually talk about are just combinations of AE for the initial state fermions and AF for the final state fermions. So the experimental strategies at LEP were to measure the forward-backward asymmetries, getting those combinations, tau polarization, and the polarized beam from SLD were able to disentangle this combination. We were able to get AE and A tau separately from tau polarization and AE from the polarized beams. And SLD was also able to extract A mu and A tau as well. The asymmetries actually give us a ratio of GV over GA. And then we have from the partial decay widths GV squared plus GA squared. So using asymmetries and the partial decay widths, we can make separate determinations of GV and GA for the leptons. And this is what it looks like for the lepton sector with the muons here, taus here, and electrons here in the GA-GV plot. Electrons, of course, are much better measured because all final states involve electrons as initial states, so we get many, many measurements of the electron parameters. And overall, this is what it looks like when we use lepton universality, this black curve. And this is a prediction from the standard model as a function of MH going from 115 GeV up to 1,000 GeV. And MT on this plot, it's still an old value of MT. I'll show a new one in a moment. But what we have from looking at this is quite clearly that the data prefer a low Higgs mass. So just looking at the lepton sector, we get that a low Higgs mass is clearly favored. For quarks, we have all of the heavy flavor results, all of the heavy flavor asymmetries from LEP and SLD averaged in a combined fit where we try and take into account interdependencies between the measurements like mixing and correlated errors such as QCD. And this has been looked at by many, 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 many eyes over many years as well since this data was the last data which went into this plot was taken in 1995. The chi-squared is incredibly good. It is 58 for roughly 90 degrees of freedom, which would say, if anything, maybe the errors are overestimated. If we just want to say that these are all statistically independent measurements, it could be saying that that things like the correlated errors are overestimated in this average. Things have not changed very much. There was a new measurement from Aleph about a year ago, where they updated one of their measurements. Otherwise, things have not really changed recently. This is the result from last summer, and it's still valid right now. Unfortunately, even after 9 years, some of the results are still preliminary. We're really hoping that by the summer, that still and preliminary will be removed, and we'll have final results from LEP and SLD on the heavy flavor sector. When we look at the quark couplings in the GA-GV plane, like we did with the leptons, for the B quarks, as we know already for a long time, things don't agree. There's the standard model value, what we expect from the standard model, and this is the 68, 95, and 99% confidence level contours. So one could be facetious and just say that based on this measurement, the standard model is ruled out at the 95% confidence level. But otherwise, some things always do end up being funny. Most other measurements, though, agree very well with the standard model. Like for the C quarks, the agreement between the data and the standard model is very, very good. If we look at it in a little bit more detail, these plots are also fairly old and have been seen by many people. If we look at AL, so using lepton universality, so this is that polarization parameter for leptons, versus AB, this is measured at slack and LEP in the lepton asymmetries, and AE from the cross-section measurements at slack. And this is AB, which they also can measure. And that's the standard model prediction with Higgs going from 115 up to 1,000 GeV. And then there's a variation for the top quark mass as well. If you just look at this, you'd say that there's very good agreement between the AF, the forward backward asymmetry, which is this band here, and the standard model for intermediate values of the Higgs mass. AB agrees very well with the standard model, but AB alone can't say anything about the Higgs mass. If there's anything funny on this plot, if you want to believe in the standard model, if there's anything funny on this plot, it's AL, coming from the lepton asymmetries and primarily coming from AE from SLD. If there's anything funny on this plot, that's the thing that's funny, not necessarily the forward-backward asymmetry. Unfortunately, for the forward-backward asymmetry, to really pin things down, we also need to use this band, since in the forward-backward asymmetry, we measure the product of AE and AB. For the C quarks, things look roughly the same. Again, it's AE which would be pulling things down, not so much the C quark forward-backward asymmetry. If we just say, okay, we believe the standard model the way it is, and we make an interpretation of our results in terms of sine squared theta, we get various values for the lepton forward-backward asymmetry, for AE coming from SLD, A tau from tau polarization. There's a very poor measurement coming from the forward-backward asymmetry in averaged over all quark final states. And then we have the measurements from the BB bar asymmetry and the CC bar asymmetry. And basically, one can look and see that there's two groupings, one at low values of sine squared theta and one at high values of sine squared theta. If we take the lepton measurements alone, we get a very good chi-squared, 1.6 for 2 degrees of freedom. If we take the hadronic guys alone, we get an excellent probability. So there's maybe something funny going on here. Maybe the errors are a little bit too big. It's not so clear. It's only when we take the combination of these guys and those guys that we start getting this poor chi-squared of 10.5 for 5 degrees of freedom. The hadrons versus the leptons are at the 3 sigma level, and there's 2.9 sigma between the two most precise quantities, that guy from SLD, and this guy from LEP. And that's been there for years now, and I doubt seriously if it'll ever go away. The only way it could go away is if we got GigaZ. That's really the way of getting rid of this is going back to the Z pole. The top quark mass. D0 came out last year with a new evaluation of the top mass from the one run data using individual event probabilities instead of a template, which is what they were doing before. And that improved the statistical error by a factor of 2.5. So this is a very powerful technique, and I'm sure that this will be used for the run 2 top quark mass measurements. Their new value of the top quark mass is 180 plus or minus 3.6 statistical and 3.9 systematic. And you can see the difference between their old measurement here, which was 173 plus or minus 8, and their new measurement, 180 plus or minus 5.4. And I was prepared to show exactly this plot today, except yesterday, D0 and CDF finally got around to combining this new result with the old results, so that now I can show a new plot with a new top quark average of 178 plus or minus 4.3 GeV. So it's gone up, the central value has gone up by 3 GeV, and the error has gone down by about 1 GeV, which is pretty much what most people would have calculated on the back of the envelope. But this has now been done with the full standard blue technique, taking into account as much as possible the correlated systematic errors between these measurements. CDF also has some new run 2 top mass measurements, which are shown here. The errors are still quite large because it's only using a very small sample of the run 2 data. This is on the order of 80 to 100 inverse nanobarns, so it's still got a ways to get all of their data into this, and these measurements are not yet included into this average. And I hope relatively soon we'll start seeing results coming out of CDF and D0, which are comparable to the old measurements, and we'll start getting averaged in here, and this error then will hopefully start going down as well. So that should be coming out rather soon. We have the WMAS from the Tevatron. All of the run 1 results are final, and there are no run 2 results yet. So this is an old measurement which hasn't changed. But they're working on it. This is the run 2 transverse mass measurement from CDF with 72 inverse picobarn, and they expect with about 250 inverse picobarn, they're getting close to that right now, with just a muon channel, to get this kind of error, 55 MeV statistical, 80 MeV systematic, which is quite comparable to their full error for all of their data from run 1. So hopefully very soon we'll start getting new measurements from run 2, and this error will start going down. Where the central value goes, of course, no one knows yet. So that's the value that we're going to be using from the Tevatron for the time being. The WMAS from LEP, all results are still preliminary. Okay, if we've got preliminary results from LEP 1 still, it's not unusual that we still have preliminary results from LEP 2, even though this data is 4 years old. Unfortunately, they're still preliminary. It's still possible to improve on this value here, because the four quark final states, which make up about half of the sample, actually have a very low weight because of uncertainties coming from color reconnection and Bose-Einstein correlations. And because of those uncertainties, the weight of the four quark final states is significantly reduced. I think they only make about 10% of the average. And hopefully this will come down. Studies are still ongoing. People are using the Z data as well as the LEP2 data to try and look at color reconnection and Bose-Einstein effects without looking at the W's, so that one can try and limit some of the models. Of course, these are difficult things. We're looking at non-perturbative models when dealing with this. So it's difficult to come up with really good calculations. Instead, we have to rely on models for the most part. We've made cross checks between the four quark final state and the QQL nu, and we don't see any difference in the W mass. So we get 22 plus or minus 43 MeV. So just from the data itself, it doesn't look like there's a difference between the four quark final state and the QQL nu. But we'd like to have some independent outside measurements of that. So we're still using this guy for the W mass from LEP. And hopefully that will soon possibly improve with improved statistical and systematic errors, and hopefully become final at some point. So comparing the Tevatron and the LEP2, we have a very, very good agreement. The chi-squared is 0.3 for 1 degrees of freedom in the average. There's also measurements of the W boson width, which also have chi-squared of 0.1 for 1 degree of freedom. So things are looking reasonably well there, comparing the Tevatron with LEP2. So these are the values that we use in the fit. 80.426 plus or minus 34 MeV for the mass, and 2.14 GeV plus or minus 70 MeV for the width. There are additional inputs that we have in the global fit, and one of them is from NUTEV. And this is, again, this is an old result, but it's still being discussed in the literature. They use the Pascos-Wolfenstein ratio to determine sine squared theta. So they look at the neutral current for neutrinos minus the cross-section for neutral current neutrinos minus the cross-section neutral current for nu bars divided by the charge current cross-section difference. And that depends directly on sine squared theta. They don't actually measure this quantity R minus. What they measure is R nu and R nu bar, which is basically the neutral current over charge current for neutrinos and neutral current over charge current for nu bars. And they have, when they extract sine squared theta, they get a value which is about 3 sigma off from the standard model, and the discrepancy is almost all coming from R nu, so from the neutrino neutral current over charge current ratio. As far as I can tell, there's no explanation forthcoming from any of the studies which have been done. There's been a lot of people looking at this measurement as well. So they've looked at experimental effects such as NUI contamination. They've looked at the parton distribution functions and non-isoscalar contributions. Possibly the PDFs could have some effect on this. There's a very, very active discussion going on about PDFs. Strange CA symmetry, higher order electroweak corrections. It doesn't look like any one of these is a smoking gun. There might be a combination of things, or it might just be that there's a statistical fluctuation, or it might be that the standard model is wrong. We have to, I think also here, we're not going to get very much information unless we do start getting some additional high-order electroweak corrections. One thing which is kind of cute that I kind of like is quite often when they quote R minus, they don't have rho here. It's just 1/2 minus sine squared theta W, but it also depends on rho. And everything could be explained if rho were not equal to 1. So here's the standard model value of rho and sine squared theta. And you know, we could have the standard model of sine squared theta and just not have rho equal to 1 for the neutrino sector. The thing which is interesting about rho nu not equal to 1 is the fact that if we look at the LEP line shape, the LEP1 line shape has too small a hadronic cross-section, which could also be accounted for by having a smaller neutrino coupling to the Z, which could be accounted for by having rho nu not equal to 1. And if we do that, then if we look at the NUTEV results and we look at the LEP1 line shape results, they agree fairly nicely with rho not equal to 1. So but that's a kind of exotic thing, and I don't know how many different possible models there could be which would have rho not equal to 1. But it is something to look at. It's kind of cute. We also use atomic parity violation measurements in the FIT, and there had been a lot of motion on this over the past few years. There had been a disagreement between the experiment and the standard model up to about 2 sigma, but then there was a lot of work done on the theory side, and in fact one of the theory papers quotes that there was an intriguing zigzag road of research which led to finding a number of small corrections which ended up canceling did a lot in reducing this difference. It's kind of like the G minus 2 for the muon stuff as well, where minus signs were found in the wrong place. This measurement now agrees very, very nicely with the standard model. So it's another boring measurement, unfortunately. I think these guys who did the standard model should be shot. I mean, they really have done a nasty job to high energy physics. That standard model just seems to come through again and again and again. The strategy that we have for the global FIT is we have a number of different inputs coming from LEP, coming from SLD, and combined LEP and SLD. We have the PP bar colliders where the top mass is new since last summer. And then measurements from other fields, atomic parity violation, the NUTEV result, and we need measurements of delta alpha hadronic coming from E plus E minus to hadrons at low energy. These all go into the standard model fitting programs. We use 2, ZFitter and TOPA Z0, which incorporate as well as we know all of the latest calculations. Maybe some of the most recent ones have not yet been fully included, but it's not easy putting a lot of these calculations into these programs. And I know that the authors of ZFitter and TOPA Z0 do an awful lot of work to try and get the results that you publish into a form that they can put into their programs. And we really need these kind of programs because these measurements are quite complicated with lots and lots of correlated errors, so we need these kind of packages to be able to do the FIT. And then we get as output parameters the standard set of standard model parameters. The most important one, at least for this talk, is the Higgs mass. This is the state of the art up until yesterday. Unfortunately, I don't have the new numbers coming from the new FIT with the new top quark mass, so these are all slightly old numbers. However, the essence of the FIT doesn't really change much. The top quark mass moves up, and that will pull the Higgs mass up. But the chi-squared per degree of freedom basically stays the same. We've all known for a long time where the sources of the bad chi-squared are coming from. There are basically 3 main sources of the bad chi-squared. We have the forward-backward asymmetry from B-quarks. We have AL from SLD. Those are the 2 biggest contributors. That actually do anything in the FIT. NUTEV has a very large chi-squared, but it basically doesn't do anything to the FIT. There's nothing that the standard model can really do to incorporate the NUTEV result into the FIT when we have all of the other data. And these 2 guys, AFB and AL, although it's not shown here, they pull in opposite directions. So of course, if you eliminate one, you can skew the FIT, but which one do you eliminate? You say, well, experimentally AL is a very clean measurement, so let's keep AL, and AFB, well, those B quarks, they're ugly and they're messy and it's complicated to do them and they've got all these QCD corrections, so let's get rid of AFB for the B quarks. But then we're doing this in the context of the standard model when we do it in the context of the standard model, AL is predicting a Higgs mass which has already been excluded. So, you know, what do you do? You put them both in. And you just live with the fact that we have a bad chi-squared. If you eliminate both of them, the chi-squared improves significantly and the results don't change. So as soon as you start, you know, picking or choosing one particular piece of data, that's when you get into the problem of biasing your results. Because you've already seen the results, you already know that they have some disagreement. So if you start pulling out things at that point, that's when you're going to get into biased results. The other way of doing it is the PDG and just blow up these errors. You get a good chi-squared, and again, the results doesn't change. So the results of the fit are rather robust to what you do to some of the fine details. This is a comparison of the direct measurements of MW and MT from LEP and Tevatron versus the indirect measurements coming from LEP1 and the SLD data in the MT-MW plane, and there's quite good agreement. This dotted line here should move 3 GeV over to the right. I didn't have time between yesterday and today to do that. I just had time to put this arrow saying that it should be moved over a bit. Hopefully in the next week or so we should be getting the full set of plots that have all of these, that have the new top quark mass incorporated. It's still safe to say that the direct MW and MT prefer a low Higgs mass, although if you move this thing over by 3 GeV, it's not quite as low as what it used to be. Finally, an updated plot. This is an updated plot with the standard blue band plot of chi-squared versus the Higgs boson mass. What we see here, the blue band is the old results up until yesterday, and this dotted blue line is what we get when we add in this shift of 3 GeV to the top quark mass. It's fairly significant. The central value changes from 96 GeV to about 117 GeV, and everything is shifted over. I plot it like this. This is on a linear scale. I plot it like that just to make sure that everybody realizes that it's a logarithmic dependence, so that's why this doesn't look like a standard parabolic chi-squared, but I do that deliberately because it is logarithmic. The Higgs limit has gone from about 215 GeV to 251 with the change of 3 GeV in the top quark mass. The top quark is probably one of the most important parameters, ingredients into the fit. Just to make sure that there's no doubt about what this blue band stands for, it represents the theoretical uncertainty as best we know. And it's an estimate of the theoretical uncertainties coming from higher order effects. And the way it's done is just by running ZFitter and Topo Z0 using different sets of flags which estimate the higher order corrections differently. And when we run it with different estimations of the higher order corrections, we get different results, and those results end up in making this width of the blue band. So basically the edges are the extrema of the differences that we get by changing the various flags depending on how you want to resum or not. Of course, since they're unknown higher order corrections that haven't been calculated yet, that's just an estimate. And it's probably an overestimate at the moment because we have in the calculations two loop corrections to MW that Georg Weichlein and others, Sven for example, have been working on, and they're incorporated, but similar corrections to the partial Z widths and to sine squared theta have not yet been incorporated, and there may be some cancellations. There may not be, but there may be cancellations. So this might be overestimated, but we won't really know until we get the higher order calculations. What we choose as this upper limit is basically this point here at 2.7 sigma, so this guy there, and that gives us the 250. The extreme, the far rightmost part of that blue band is what we use when we calculate the upper limit. Beyond the standard model, lots of people here are working on the MSSM. We know by now that in the MSSM, things look somewhat better. This is the bands of light SUSY going up to heavy SUSY, and possibly the data is saying that it prefers the MSSM over the standard model, although that impression will change a bit when we move this guy over by 3 GeV, this ellipse here, when we move it over to the right by 3 GeV. But it still shows that the data are fully compatible with the MSSM. That's also shown in this plot, looking at MW versus sine squared theta. This is the current data, and this is the standard model and the MSSM, and this is what might look like things might look like later in life at LHC and at Linear Collider. And I've been told that my time is out, so I'll cut to the chase. I'm not going to tread on thin ice. You guys know much more about what we can do with the Higgs mass than I do. Basically saying in the near-term future, over the next decade, we should get MW to 15 MeV, MT to 1.5 GeV. Far future, we can do significantly better. Unfortunately, it is the far future. So this is what we have looking forward for the next decade. And I just have a few plots which show what might happen. That might be a possible outcome with the Linear Collider, and that would be really, really interesting. Even if we found the Higgs already, if we still see that radiative corrections are telling us something different than what the particles are telling us, then life could be interesting again. So that's a nice scenario. That's a nice plot. I'd like to see that one in the future. Give you guys something to do. Conclusions. We've measured the standard model with unprecedented precision. The largest discrepancies, we've got our NUTEV and the forward-backward B-quark asymmetry. I would say that there are statistical fluctuations at the 3 sigma level. Higgs mass, 251 GeV. We should be able to find it at the LHC. Future inputs, we should be getting final results from LEP 2. We should be getting final results from LEP 1. And we should be getting new measurements from the Tevatron Run 2 in the very near future, and in the LHC by the end of the decade, and then the far future. Okay.
Thank you. So we have some time for some brief questions.
You had your hand up first.
I'm sorry. I've asked you this question before, but we're still quarreling about the A leptonic versus the A sub B. So let me just ask you again.
Okay.
So from the episode of R sub B at LEP,
Yeah. We
know that R sub B was overestimated with the initial B tags that were used at LEP and came into agreement when Aleph first put in very highly B-tags that had high efficiency for rejecting charm.
Right.
The original B-tags used at LEP had about let in about 3% of the sample being charm. If you then apply that to A sub B, you would expect that the A sub B would be diluted by this charm at about the 5% level. If you add back that 5%, the A forward backward B comes into pretty good agreement with the sine squared theta W from the leptonic side. Now, as you said in your talk, all these things have been considered at LEP. People have gone over and over the analyses, but the number for AB forward backward didn't change.
Right.
So how do we understand this?
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure how best to explain it. I think that, well, doing a cross-section measurement is a lot more difficult than doing an asymmetry measurement. And one of the things which people worked on very hard was trying to get purer samples in the cross-section measurements than in the asymmetry measurements. One of the things which people have done in the asymmetry measurements is they've measured the charm quark asymmetry and the BB bar quark asymmetry simultaneously. I think that that's taken away some of this thing of contamination in the BB bar sample. All I can say, well, maybe I can say something, and that is that. Come on. Let me go back to the plot of the asymmetries. This guy here from Delphi is one of the more recent updates of the BB bar asymmetry, and it's also one of the highest ones. It's using leptons. It's not using a lot of the vertex tagging, although vertex tagging does play a role here. Could be that guy is right, but I would kind of doubt it, because there are other new measurements in here coming from Aleph, for example. They came out with in the last year, they also came out with an update here, and things didn't change very much in that update. So it's difficult to say. I mean, these are very detailed, very complex measurements. It's true. That may mean that, you know, there are mistakes going on in there, but I would tend to doubt it.
One last.
A related question to Michael, something I've wondered about. Is it possible to extract the value of R sub B from the sample of events that are used, well, let's say R sub B and R sub C, from the samples of events that are used to make the asymmetry measurements? And then it would be interesting to know what those values of R sub B and R sub C are. I don't know how precise they would be, if it would be a useful measurement or not. But
that might be interesting. I don't know whether anybody has tried to do that. It might be interesting. It would probably be very difficult in these days, because even though some of these experiments still have some grad students floating around, most of them don't anymore. So trying to reanalyze this data is going to be very, very difficult, and it might be just a lot easier to wait for LC and make sure that we do the Z-pole more than just for calibrations.
Okay, we have to move on, so let me hold the other questions for lunch, and I'll call the next speaker, Michael Chanowitz.